He's barely used. Be a good deal for anybody. Well, we've been in a series that we've called Affliction for the last few weeks, and we're talking about the things in our lives that trip us up and harass us and that we somehow can't seem to get a handle on. And we've been talking about how Jesus changes those things. And we've started with a focus on those kind of afflictions that we somehow carry within ourselves. The things that, like our story and our drivenness or our addictions, things that are somehow resident within us and that we're trying to grapple with in a variety of ways. But we want to, over the next couple of weeks, take a little different focus to talk about some of the afflictions that come to us from the outside, that are brought to us in a way. And so I want to be honest with you this morning. It's not an easy thing to say, frankly. But I feel like I owe it to you to be honest and not to beat around the bush and be direct. That for myself, in my life, my greatest affliction is you. It really is. That when I think about the ongoing pieces of my life, invariably they come in relationship. That it's in relationship that I have all this aggravation and fear and frustration. And I have, as a result, I've stood firmly together with Linus for much of my life in declaring, I love mankind. It's people I can't stand. But we're intention, aren't we? Because we're made for relationship. And we long for them and they're, and we enter into them with great hope and great expectation. But invariably, something comes in between you and that other person. It might be something of your doing or failure to do. It might be something from their side. It might be something that they did that reminded you of the last relationship. And you find yourself saying, you're just like my ex-girlfriend or whatever. And so as that happens, there's part of me that just sort of turns away a little and says, okay. And depending on the gravity and the history of our relationship, I might find that I spend more time standing this way than this way. And whether I turn physically or I just cross my arms and back up a little bit in my chair, or I just close a part of my heart, I'm really standing this way. And yet we know that there are good things in relationships. And so we want a process by which we might turn back to that other person. That we might be reconciled once again. That it might be like it was when we first started. And we know, at least within the context of Christianity, that that has something to do with forgiveness. That there's somehow those things play a factor in this process of me deciding to turn from this direction to this direction. I learned about forgiveness and relationships in the context of my brothers. There were occasional altercations, one might say. And however you imagine these altercations, you must understand that I was the good cop. But invariably something would happen between me and my brothers, and my mother would step in. Because there was enough of that going along. And she would say, what did you do to your brother? Which would elicit a confession from the offender. And she would then say to the offender, go and apologize to your brother. This was the first step in this process of turning from away from each other toward each other. One had to first, the offender needed to offer an apology of some kind. And then upon the having elicited the confession or the apology, she would then turn to the offended party and say, "Now what do you say to your brother when he says he's sorry?" And the invitation, at the very least, was that I was to accept that apology. So it was a two-step process. The offender would be identified, he would offer, and I, in accepting it, was turning toward, at least in his direction. So for me, there's a couple of problems with that model, and the model in your home might have varied on that theme a little bit. And I think my mother had some good concepts included in her process, that there's something about acknowledging when I've done something wrong, there's something about accepting or forgiving and laying something, saying, okay, I'll let that go. But the problem in this process, for me at least, was that when my brother offered his apology and I was being asked to turn back toward him, what I was being asked to turn back to was the problem. Because he said, all right, I'm sorry I did X, and I now have to make it a judgment. Is the value of what he's offering worth the relationship? Like, how will I accept that in order to have the relationship, or is the problem too big? Is this the first time we've had this problem? Or is this the millionth time he said sorry for that? And so I'm in the process of trying to turn back, but I'm trying to judge how big is the problem. And are you sincere in saying, I agree it's a problem? Or are you just sorry that you got caught? Is the value of what you're offering to mend the relationship worth it to me? Will it balance the scales of the hurt that you've inflicted? Are the flowers beautiful enough that you don't have to sleep on the couch tonight? And so the question I'm really trying to evaluate as my mother instructs me to turn back to my brother is he worth it? Or am I just setting myself for him to step on me again when she's not around? And so I might turn back because, well, she's right there. What am I going to do? But I'm going to be guarded. I'm not turning all the way. So invariably, there would be a time of probation. I would guard myself a little in case he wasn't really sorry or he didn't really want to change or he didn't really respect our relationship. And that the full turning toward him again was cautious and tentative and quite guarded. And that in the course of our relationship, we built up a bit of a fort of these things. To say, oh, I don't buy that one. I've heard that one before. And so I won't turn on that one. And there becomes between him and I a barrier that we can't make it across any longer. But having experienced that there, I now experience it with you. And you do something that's just like what my brother did, and I say, well, I forgave that one too many times. I'm not going there again. And in the end, my stance towards relationship is always one of, well, sure, but come a little, no. It's been defined as prickly in my case. Because I think I was always judging to say, how much distance do I need from you to be safe? I don't mind being in a relationship with you, but just not so close. Because it's in our closest relationships that we've had the most pain, isn't it? It's in those relationships in which we've opened our heart and had it hurt that we're now particularly cautious in. And so I become a person who focuses on distance rather than closeness. It's my fundamental stance in relationship. So if you can relate to part of that model, however it worked in your home, it might be helpful for us to consider that God also has an idea how this might work. That He is also interested in reconciliation. That He is also interested in this process of turning toward one another. That the whole message of Scripture has been that is barriers and obstacles in our relation between us and God. What's the process by which we might turn to one another? And is God in the same system that I was in which He comes, He decides He's got to turn to us because there's this big mess between you, Him and I, and He's just disgusted by it? Or why would He turn toward us? God, the Bible is absolutely clear that before any of us or anyone offered an apology, God had already turned toward us. That this is the principal message that we celebrate and focus on at Christmas. The idea that God came Himself in the person of Jesus Christ to us. That He was in the process of sending Jesus, He was turning Himself in our direction. That we had not in any way thought that we were turning toward Him. In fact, if you read the Gospels, when Jesus came, nobody recognized that He had come from God. Or very few. But the message of Jesus is that God was turning toward us first. And that he was turning not because He saw the problem, but because He saw your value. He asked the question, is it worth it? And He said, you are definitely worth it. That Jesus, that God, your Creator, created something inside of you that is beautiful beyond comparison. And it is, for some of us, it has been covered over and rolled in the mud and concreted over from all these events and relationships so much that we don't even know that beauty exists in us. But God sees it. And He turns towards you today and says, that beautiful thing that is inside of you, I would do anything to turn toward you, to see that part of you, and for us to be in communion with each other, that we would be reconciled, and that we could clear away all this debris that is between you and I. And He turns to you this morning knowing the full extent of the problem. He's God. And so He knows all of the things that your journey includes up to this point. He knows all of the details, and yet He turns towards you first and says, could we be reconciled? I would love to be reconciled with you. And He also has the power and understanding and tenderness to know how to deal with all those things that are between you and Him. And so it's this perfect coming together of a God who says, I see something amazing in you. I know it's there. I know how to get, how to remove so that we might, that we might enjoy together the beauty of what is in you. So within Christian circles, we would say this idea that Jesus, being God, came to earth is proof that he desires a relationship with us. Why else would you leave a place of glory to come to a place like earth that's dirty and messy and confused and angry and hateful, painful? But I want you to understand today the intensity of the desire that God has for you as an individual. That it does not matter in any way what the course of your life has done to how you understand and see yourself. Nothing that you've done or experienced or participated in is enough to hide your beauty from God. He always sees it. And no matter how you would describe yourself, God sees you as a desirable, lovely, beautiful person that he wants to be reconciled with. And that it doesn't matter what you're going to have to tell him, he will only see your beauty. He will never be distracted by the dirt and mess that you now think is overwhelming. That he will always see, he has always seen, and he will continue to see the beauty that is you. It's a very challenging thing to describe, because I don't want to use it. I feel like God has given me a little insight into how he feels about the fact that you might say, no, I don't think I can go there. Because I have opportunity in my role here to walk with people. And that journey sometimes involves sorting through their dirt and mess. And invariably, that's a hard process. It takes a lot of courage. But it feels a bit imbalanced. And that they're coming to me and we're sorting through their dirt and mess. And invariably in that process, they'll say, why are you bothering with all this mess and dirt? You're busy. I'll just back up. It's not worth it. Because they don't see their value. But God has given me this beautiful insight. He says, no, wait. He allows me to see the value of the person I'm walking with. And it's like at that moment, I mean, it's true enough. It takes time and energy and careful thinking. Relationships and people are complicated. But he puts this little thing in my heart that says, I don't care what we have to sort through. Don't pull away, because then I'll miss you. I'll miss you. I want to see the beautiful diamond that is you displayed in a way that reveals it to its full effect. Displayed in a place that everyone could see it. That God's heart is broken when we say that's too, there's no value, because he sees our value. And he turns towards us and pleads with us, would you turn toward me, and that your beauty might be revealed. And so that's been the journey for many of us, many of the people in this room, is we have taken the risk to say, I'll take a glance over my shoulder at God and realize that he's already turned toward us. We just took a little glimpse, but we saw that he was already turned toward us. And that he was full of compassion and tenderness, that he didn't see the mess, that he saw who I was. He saw some beauty in me, he saw value in me. And we've discovered that as we stand in that place, as I start to comprehend that he has already turned toward me before I gave him any thought, that suddenly it's easier for me to turn to you. That when I have heard the voice of God tell me why he loves me and what he is particularly proud of in me, it puts my heart at rest. It gives me confidence. And now suddenly I can recognize that same beauty in you. And I'm not distracted by the dirt and mess that you bring along, because there's beauty in you. And I can turn towards you without fear, without great anxiety that now I'm taking on responsibility for all your problems. And I can just turn towards you and know that, and ask that somehow in my turning toward you, I would reflect back to you what God is already doing. That you would see in me how God is looking at you. So there continues to be very difficult relationships in my life. But I'm not nearly as closed. Even those unresolved relationships don't cause me to give up hope and to close my heart and turn away and say, well, I guess this doesn't work. And that I find life and beauty in relationships where even sometimes I don't see it. And so sitting with us today are people where we're seeing reconciliation in relationships that it shouldn't be possible. That we're seeing marriages stand strong and healthy and stable in spite of great pain between those two people. We're seeing reconciliation. We're seeing reconciliation in families. We're seeing reconciliation across from people who sit over here to people who sit over there. But the first step is that we must take the chance and say, is God looking at me? And to find that he has already turned fully toward you. So as the worship team comes back and prepares for the Lord's table, I just give you these two options. If you've never recognized that God has already turned toward you, I would just invite you to take the chance this morning. And by coming forward, as Ryan suggested at the end of the service, and to come forward and say, this is my way of saying, do you notice me? Are you turned toward me? What would Jesus say to you this morning that would be specific for you, that would let you know that you are turned, that he has turned toward you? And for others of you, as we've talked about relationships, even just raising the question has brought a particular individual to mind, a particular individual in which the relationship between you and that person is broken. And so if that's you, I would just ask you to say to Jesus, what do you see in that person? Allow Jesus to tell you what he notices in that person. And then ask him, Jesus, what does it look like that I might turn toward that relationship, back to that individual, and reflect you in that relationship? What would that look like for you? Bishop Todd is going to come and lead us in the Lord's table. Thank you.